I've been sitting here thinking about all the things you do to me, how you make me feel. But wondering if it's the same for you, but when you're not around, I lose my mind, cause you keep it like a secret. Why won't you?
Salutation, greetings, and welcome everybody from wherever you are around this great earth of ours. It is January 2025. It's hard to believe that we've already moved halfway into the 2000s, but that's a good thing for all of us that are here to witness what's going on this earth as we speak. My name is Kevin. They've called me Man, but I go by Kevin. This is a show called In God You Trust, and it's my pleasure to be able to share some exciting news and events and topics with you regarding private trust and estate planning, civil law, statutory versus non-statutory, public versus private jurisdictions, money, the species of money, debt, credit, negotiable instruments, legal terms and definitions, U.S. codes, commerce competency, and today's topic is going to be new money. So we were very fortunate a couple of weeks ago, just before the holiday season, to be able to have a special guest on regarding the new growth patterns within the digital asset community and space called cryptocurrency. But before we go there, I just want to share a couple of things with all of you. First off, I'm very grateful and very happy to be able to talk with as many people as possible about our world, the life that we're working through, the spiritual competition that we're in, things that are happening on this planet, and just as mankind is, to, you know, hold hands and to be very grateful that we have each other as we move through this time in our lives, and, you know, be very healthy and happy about who you are and use that energy wisely, because that is the most precious thing that you have besides your time. Yeah, just a little background about myself. I got into the telecom industry back in the late 1980s. And went on to start an industry called prepaid phone cards, which has gone into a whole different direction. But essentially, the industry of prepaid started way back in 1989. And as I moved forward through those 10 years and then on into other industries, I became very familiar with the concept of change, because telecommunications was at the masthead, or at the point of the spear, as it relates to communications and all the things that were about to change at that time. And the convergence of internet technology and the World Wide Web was just starting. In fact, I didn't even have an email address back then. I got my first cell phone when I was 27 years old, and I still have that same phone number of all things. And so as I moved forward into the industry of telecommunications, I got something very, very profound that hit me. It's about people, right? Telecommunications is about people. And if you can communicate and share your thoughts, your dreams, your aspirations, your issues, your problems, and we can work together as people, that's really what the core of telecom is. But the way telecom was set up originally was it was controlled as a utility. And a utility is very much like a big company that, you know, looked at time as a commodity. Even though time is free when we're born onto this earth, the fact is that big corporations were able to capture those units, create a pipe called a cord, and then toggle you into their pricing model, where they would force you to essentially pay to call somebody outside of, quote, your home. And back then it was called long distance. Well, that's a long time ago, right? We've gone through so many different gyrations of technologies and different ways of communicating. And now here we are at 2025, where we're talking about artificial intelligence and cryptocurrencies and DeFi, decentralized finance. So all of these industries are kind of like crashing in at the same time. And the opportunity for those of you that have an entrepreneurial spirit, or if you don't, you know, think about it, what it means to actually take advantage and strike at the time, because there are things that come into your life maybe once or twice where you have an opportunity to really take advantage of something and move forward and, you know, create some wealth for you and your family and live in abundance and take care of the things that you need to. And so we're going to hop right in. I'm going to introduce a very special guest. And before I do that, I want to tee this up. So back in 2009, there was a little white paper that was circulating out mostly among the gamers. And it was 9 pages, and it had to do with something called Bitcoin. In fact, I texted a friend of mine today, and he said, "Yeah, Cav, you were the one telling me about that way back when, and it was only 5 cents, and I thought it was a scam." Well, I think today Bitcoin is sitting right around $97,000. It goes up and down, but it's never going to go back to where it was currently. At some point, maybe you'll find out that it will. But for those of you who still look at cryptocurrency as some kind of a weird thing, it's digital money. And the money that you have deposited in your bank account right now with your fiat money, with your credit cards, or with your paycheck, that's all digital money. But the difference is that we have a blockchain now that is intercepting and creating proof of title and proof of chain. And there's a lot of really interesting things that go with that. Please, by all means, don't think that you have to be an expert in this space to either A, invest in it, or B, use it, or C, leverage it. Because this is a simple solution. But we're going to cut right to the chase, because what we're about to hear from with my dear friend and guest, Dr. Brian Fontenot, is the emergence now of the next phase of Web 3.0, which is the internet is now money, and the supply of money will be backed by assets. So an asset-backed opportunity. So let's go ahead and say hello to the world here, Brian. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself, and let's start talking a little bit about what you got.
Why, hello there, folks. Hey, Kevin. Thank you for having me on the show again this week. I appreciate it. And I just wanted to say hello out there to all of our XUSD token holders, and because they're all listening right now. So, hello, and we're happy to have you guys with us as we go through this today.
Awesome. You're sure welcome to be on here anytime. So let's kind of go down the road. I don't want to go too far back, but let's talk about presently. Like, this crypto market is starting to become more or less ubiquitous. And that's a fancy word, meaning that you're starting to hear it from all different vectors, whether it's the politicians or bigger businesses, big banks, even celebrities, athletes. People are starting to pay attention because there have been more millionaires made in the last, what, 10 years just off crypto than any other industry in the history of commerce. So can you give a little background about that, Brian?
Well, I mean, kind of, just as you were alluding to in the intro to the show here, that Bitcoin, back in the late 90s, Bitcoin was something that was being talked about, and it was very kind of shadowy. It was more thought of as a dark web thing versus being something that was a generally accepted idea. As you were talking about going from where Bitcoin originally started, where it was pennies, to now, here we see it, at a little over 98,000, 98,555 as of this moment, is what its value is. A little over a 1 trillion, almost $2 trillion market cap as it stands at this moment. Bitcoin is what started it all. Now, I have my qualms about Bitcoin, and we can talk about that later on. But it kind of started the revolution for digital assets, that has created an entire cottage industry, where you have new proof of stake consensus coins such as Ethereum. You have XRP, Tether, which is a stable coin locked in fiat to the U.S. dollar. Those are really the top four. And then you have kind of a different type of stable coin that gives annual percentage rate for staking. It's also a proof of stake, but a stable coin nonetheless in Solana. And that's really your top five that are living kind of in the forefront, at the forefront of the digital asset space. And from there, you have these, what I still consider it to be a meme coin, or just kind of a joke that was thrown out there into the cryptocurrency space, like no one was ever going to buy this thing, kind of a thing. And then you have somebody like Elon Musk that opens his mouth and starts talking about this coin, and it was called Dogecoin. And Dogecoin, between Dogecoin, Ripple, and Monero, XRP, Ripple, same name, same thing. Those three kind of brought crypto into the generally accepted public space. And when Dogecoin, made its meteoric rise, in the way that it was, talked about, and kind of a fun pump, as they call it, for the coin, with someone like Elon talking about it, it took off. And so when you now you start having celebrities and people start talking about cryptocurrency as if it's just as native as the US dollar. So it's taken a lot of time to get where we are right now with the entire industry. It's been said that the entire crypto industry as a whole is valued at somewhere to the tune of about 4.6 trillion US dollars. In the total value of the whole industry, all 3,200 plus cryptocurrencies that exist in the open market. Now, what a lot of people don't realize is some of these coins are not their own blockchain. They live as a smart contract on other blockchains. And then you have some that are what I call a fully diversified cryptocurrency, where they have their own blockchain. And the perfect example of this is, tokens like USDT, Tether. They have their own, the TRX blockchain, but they also have smart contracts across the other major cryptocurrency platforms, such as Ethereum and Polygon and BSC, Tron. Their USDT Tether has extended their net far and wide, to every other major network, so that they can reach as many people as possible. And as we've gone through the growth and the development of this industry, we've found out that marketing is key for this industry. We have to generate a level of trust for this industry that is on par or equal to the level of trust that's been generated around the United States dollar. So in doing that, that's a hard task. That's a hard ask of any business owner, especially of any cryptocurrency developer, because you're asking to match the might from a marketing standpoint of the United States. That's a tough nut to crack. And for coins such as Bitcoin to be able to do that where it stands today, that was really, really hard to do. But when you get a grassroots push behind a cryptocurrency such as Bitcoin, of course it's going to take off. Of course it's going to step up, just like grassroots political campaigns. It's the same kind of thing. Most grassroots political campaigns, if there is enough drive behind them, they can end up winning at the poll. Well, the same thing holds true with any type of marketing, but especially within the crypto industry itself. As long as you develop a grassroots swell behind your crypto, you are going to be successful. There's just no way around it. And the perfect example of that, other than Bitcoin, is that of Ripple, which is XRP. You have fanboys all over social media talking about Ripple and how great it is and how wonderful it is. And by creating that army of what I call, and really the company that kind of coined this term was Adobe Software, but they were the first ones that I know of that ever had this as a job role within their company. But they extended that far and wide to social media content creators and television personalities and so on. But they called the term a software evangelist, someone that would go out there and tell the world about how great Adobe software is. Well, really, what XRP has done is they have created a giant swell of crypto evangelists from a grassroots level. And by doing that, they have gotten a rabid following behind their token. And really, that's the key to what this industry is. It is driven by people, just like the majority of the banking industry throughout the world has been driven by people and businesses. Same holds true for the crypto industry, and that's where we are today, is at that grassroots level of watching cryptos build and watching a defined and dedicated group of, evangelists behind these individual products that raise them up to the level of where a lot of them are today.
Awesome. Well, for those of you, Brian is a very well-spoken man. He's a computer scientist. He's done so many amazing things. I just want to pull this back just a little bit for some of the people that maybe you're not in this space yet, if that's okay, Brian. Because
Sure.
What I want, what is the number one product in the world? Money,
Well,
number
of
one,
course, it's money.
right?
It's
So,
any. It's a little pieces of paper with dead presidents' faces on them.
that's right. So this concept of money, which I've been studying for, 35 plus years, has been a fascinating. I can't get out of it, right? It's like once you go down this rabbit hole, you can't stop because, since way before in Rome, I mean, money has controlled populations, it's caused wars, it's created all kinds of wealth. It's because people become very poor because of the lack of knowledge about money. So mostly what I see, again, I take back and I take my goggles and I put them on. I say, I'm just the average individual that wants to figure out how I can get my head wrapped around this thing. Because what I see about what XUSD is that we're bringing back the concept of lawful money. Lawful money is different than legal tender, you guys, ladies and gentlemen. Legal tender is debt. There are notes that are written by an organization called the Federal Reserve. They're issued into the society based on the signatures of individuals, and it's backed by bonds, credits, securities. And this is a credit-based system right now. You have an interloping third party called the central bank that is in the middle of all of our transactions. And that's why you see such a constant kind of beating the drum, like, how do we end this Fed and get these big banks out of our business? Well, that's what we're doing. So, when you think of cryptocurrency, a lot of people just think, I can get rich, right? I should have bought at 5 cents and now it's $100,000. Well, that's just the beginning of what this is all about. Ultimately, you're going to be able to have your crypto wallet or your vault sitting on a blockchain, and you're not going to have to think about how do I transfer this to get that over there so I can just go to the grocery store and buy $100 worth of food. That's when people are going to say, oh, dang, that was easy. Just kind of like when we first got our first email address or when, we first set up our website and when we first got our cell phones, right? Those were all adoption phases. And so what Brian is referring to, if you don't mind me saying this, is he's talking about how does a grassroots movement help in something that is, again, ubiquitous, meaning all of us are dependent and interdependent upon this concept of money. So once everybody says, well, wait a minute, I used to use a US dollar, which goes down in value. Now I'm using a ex-US crypto dollar that is going up in value because it's locked against the treasures of the planet, which are called assets. So this is the tra this is, let's call this a kind of a transition, Brian. So what is the difference between a typical like cryptocurrency and a stable coin that you have been developing?
Well, let me make a little bit of a expanse on what you just said about lawful money. It doesn't just apply to the United States system. Lawful money applies to every central bank on the planet because you have to remember, as we talked about in the last show that I was on, we talked about the fact that everyone follows the United States. So when the United States pulled away from the gold standard, every other major first world nation followed suit. And subsequently, the rest of the planet did as time moved forward. So, this idea of legal tender and lawful money applies to every central banking institution, regardless of the country that you reside in. And this is something that's being ran from, organizations such as the IMF and the Bank for International Settlements. They're kind of the overarching compliance infrastructure above all of these central banking institutions and the major commercial AAA banks. So, going forward, let's keep that in perspective, right? That, of course, it is vitally important to have an understanding of what these new currencies, these new assets that are coming out onto the marketplace, such as Bitcoin and Ethereum and XRP and so on, what they mean in contrast to the fiat dollar. Now, understand that term fiat when we're talking about lawful money versus legal tender. Fiat means that it is the price and value of that piece of paper with a dead president's face on it is determined by a banker that sits in an office somewhere. And these groups of bankers that trade these currencies back and forth between one another is what dictates the price of that individual currency. Now, to understand that, you have to understand that originally the framework was that we kept gold at Fort Knox here in the United States. That was backing behind that dollar. 1971, that all went away. So now this is where we get into the argument of legal tender versus lawful money. Lawful money was pre-1971 in the United States because it had a value that was an actual intrinsic value of gold that was backing that little piece of paper that was being handed across to the teller at the general store for him to put in the till. After 1971, it all was dictated by bankers, and to date is being dictated by bankers. So with that said, that's where your contrast between lawful money and fiat dollars now, the fiat US dollar is what it is today, is dictated by the supply and demand of banking institutions. And really, us as the common man have no, we carry no weight in the dictation of what that exchange rate is. So knowing that now, when we're talking about development of cryptocurrencies, so when you talk about things like the Bitcoin as an example, which was the first one to come to the market, Bitcoin is a what's known as a proof of work consensus mechanism. So basically what that means is that coins are generated by the work that is done by a group of computer systems known as miners. And those miners actually take the information from the blockchain, and they're given a chunk of a piece of encrypted data called a block. And those miners collectively around the world work on decrypting that block. Whatever set of computers, or one computer in particular, even can break that block down and decrypt it. Once that decryption is completed, that miner or that group of computers is awarded a portion of a coin or a whole coin. Now, whole coins have gone away a long time ago because the complexity level for mining has increased so exponentially since the opening of the Bitcoin market that it's very hard for a single mining computer to break an entire block down and decrypt that information. And we're told that the information that it is decrypting is junk data. Now, I have my own take on that that I'll leave on the shelf for now. But this information, this data that it is decrypting, is steadily growing in complexity as the age of the individual blockchain grows. So as it becomes older and older, the complexity level increases by a particular factor. So that's proof of work. That's known as a proof of work consensus model. Then you have cryptocurrencies such as Ethereum. That's known as a proof of stake consensus model. Now, what does proof of stake mean? Well, what it means is that those validator nodes, those nodes that are within the Ethereum network, those nodes that are validating every block that comes across and is being decrypted by those nodes have different weighting values to them as to where they take priority within the blockchain, as to how much data they get access to decrypt the block. The more stake that they have in the network, meaning the more coins that are loaded onto the wallet of that particular node, the higher the prioritization is. So that's what proof of stake is the higher the stake, the higher the priority of the node, the higher the priority of the node, the more share volume that they receive in the governance of that coin. Now, that's proof of what known as proof of stake consensus mechanism. Now, what came after that was something that everybody really scratching in their heads, which was called a stable coin. And a stable coin, I really truly want to kind of break this down as far as I possibly can so that our listeners here can have an understanding of really what we're talking about. The stable coin made people scratch their heads because they took and said, we want to create something that doesn't have the same volatility as a proof of work or proof of stake consensus mechanism type coin. We want to create something that is locked. The volatility isn't crazy. It might go up 12 cents, it might go down 12 cents, but really you're only going to see maybe a 12 to 15 cent difference one side or the other to $1. They lock the value of their cryptocurrency to the United States dollar. That's what's known as a stable coin. Now, the one that kind of made the biggest rumble, as it were, when it entered into the market with a stable coin product was Tether, and which then became USDT Tether. And Tether kind of changed the game as far as what was capable in blockchain technology by locking it to the value of the United States dollar, 15 cents one direction or the other. Now you have something that is very supremely stable. It's something that you can't find that level of stability in something like a proof of work or a proof of stake consensus mechanism coin because it's tidally locked to the value of the US dollar. And by doing that, they gained a whole lot of traction within the market space. So, in going forward, we kind of thought about it and went, well, we'd like to take with us as the developer of XUSD, we kind of stepped back and took this idea of we want to take the best elements from a proof of work or proof of stake consensus mechanism, and we want to take the best elements of a stable coin, and we kind of want to mash them together. Kind of think of it like we took bits of Play-Doh from other tubs and made our own color, right? So what we did is we decided we were going to take something that was originally developed by the co-founder of Ethereum back in 2017, a consensus mechanism model that was called proof of authority. And what proof of authority was, and the way that that system worked, was proof of authority required that a node be a known object, meaning that it be a known address within the entire network. And there was an individual that is responsible for the security of that node, ensuring that it remains uncompromised and that it is, completely untouched by outside hands, where that individual node or computer system that is in charge of decrypting these blocks of information and subsequently then are awarded a coin, very much like the proof of work consensus model, but it's not outside miners where you can publicly mine that individual coin. It's a set of validator nodes that validate each block of the blockchain by doing the decryption and then creates more tokens within the overall market space. So that's what proof of authority was. We took that model, being that it was open source, and we heavily modified it, and we made a whole bunch of changes to it. The whole bunch of changes that we made was that we felt because we have created a pool of assets and an asset-backed cryptocurrency where we needed to ensure that we were validating not only the nodes themselves validating each block of information and decrypting it, but also the information that's stored on the chain needs to be validated. And one of those pieces of information are the value, the numbers, and the information surrounding our assets themselves, which are immutably registered to the blockchain as we add assets to the active asset pool. So in doing that, now the proof of authority mechanism has been heavily modified to validate all of those assets at the completion of every block. So now at every really, our asset pool is being verified every 5 seconds. There's 17,920 blocks per day that the XUSD One blockchain, our brand new blockchain that we debuted on Christmas Day, now validates every asset that is in our asset pool every 5 seconds, and validates its value against the commodities markets through our AI system, which the brain, our AI, goes in and reviews the value of commodities markets and then puts a number out there for us to gauge and guide the network as to addressing the value of the asset pool itself. When our market closes for 15 minutes every day, what our base minimum price or the floor that is established by the value of this pool multiplied by the number of coins available within the market at that moment is what dictates the value of our cryptocurrency as a whole. That's where we stand apart and where we stand different is because we're not only validating the blocks of information and decrypting them, but we're also validating the assets that are registered to that chain at the same time. So now you've created an entire ecosystem that both the common man, such as you and I, and the institutional grade investors, such as hedge funds, banking institutions, trade houses, they can all get involved because now every bit of the assets that are on that chain and that are backing that chain are validated in real time. So it creates a completely new infrastructure for the banking system to be able to hitch their wagon to in the digital asset space, where before it was only looked at upon as a fad, where now it has a real utility for institutional investors and institutions to get involved in.
That's amazing, Brian. So, in listening to you, and I'm listening to the consciousness of all the people listening in right now, they're probably scratching their head, but I just to break this down really simple. See, there's been some I know some cryptocurrency names or companies or organizations or brands out there that have said that they've got assets backing one of them, so I think I won't mention it, but real estate, maybe one or two think they do, but A, do they have a patent on it? And B, how do they offset if one of, let's say, they have a real estate vertical as their assets, and all of a sudden that market tanks? What happens to the coin? And how do you offset that? What's your hedge against maybe one of those verticals having a bad day, for example?
That's a great question. I'll say it like this. Anybody else that's coming out in the market right now that says, we have assets that back our coin. Okay, great. What are those assets? When you propose that question, the first thing out of their mouth is, well, we can't tell you that. Well, why? Well, we have NDAs. We can't, t we, nope, we can't talk about what those assets are, or who those assets belong to. They hold that information very close to the vest. And that does not lend well to institutions becoming involved because there's that lack of transparency. It feels very clandestine to institutional investors to get involved because they can't validate what you're telling the world is actually backing the coin. So what happens in that instance, right, is now when you look at us and we look at those situations, we go, okay, we have to have transparency. We have to have the ability to register those assets to the chain so they're being validated block by block, and so that the general public has the ability to see those assets in real time. So we present all of that information transparently to the public. Of course, there are some redactions because we need to keep our asset holders protected and their names and their contact information protected. And certain elements of the individual contracts are also redacted because, of course, that is part of our proprietary trade secret, secret sauce, as it were, and how we are attaching those physical assets to the blockchain. But the methodology by which we're attaching those physical assets to the blockchain is patented. To the best of our knowledge, we're the only blockchain in existence that is fully patented, not only in countries like New Zealand and Australia, Canada, the EU, the UK, in Austria and Germany. But we're also fully approved, patented for the methodology of attaching physical assets to the blockchain in the United States. And to the best of our knowledge, that's an unprecedented move. Blockchain technology of this type has not really been given patents in the out of the United States Patent Office. They're very, very shy to do so. And we've worked very hard with our partners in order to ensure that that's something that has taken place. And to ensure that that is something that's been properly done and properly registered, and ensuring that all of these patents, to include a WIPO patent or World Intellectual Property Office patent, an international patent body that's recognized by the United Nations. So we have kind of covered all our bases as far as patents are concerned. So when we look at some of these other coins out in the market that say we're asset backed, well, okay, that's great. That's grand. That's wonderful. But we have the patent. So really, they're violating our held patent as it stands. Now, do I want to run every single cryptocurrency that claims to be asset backed out of the market? No, I don't. I really don't, because competition breeds business. And we have to have some competition within the marketplace in order to drive what we're building behind the XUSD One stable chain. So in doing so, we're not going to run everybody out of the market, but there are some that are going to get a knock on the door from a process server and receive a suit because they're directly infringing upon the patent. So understand that that's part of our protection mechanism for our product. Now, what's more than that is our asset pool is heavily diversified. We're spread across 20 plus separate commodities. Now, to give some understanding, being spread across that many commodities within the overall market creates a situation where, to as far as my math goes right now, the way we look at it is in the way we explain it is like this. It would require the mobilization of the entirety of the gross domestic product of a first world nation against commodities markets, all commodities markets, not just the 20 plus that we inhabit, all commodities markets to deliberately drive the prices down to in order to cause a depreciation in the value of our currency. And that is a hard thing for anyone, let alone a country, to do. Now, why is that? I mean, when you start talking about superpowers like the nation of China, for instance, some folks say, oh yeah, that's easy for them. Well, yeah, it may be easy from a monetary standpoint, but from the political blowback that would take place by them doing that, you think that the blowback was bad on Russia for invading Ukraine, where they got dropped from PayPal, from MasterCard, from Visa, every major banking institution that was based in the United States and abroad pulled out of Russia, and they have literally lost their interconnection to the global financial system. And they are now an island amongst themselves. And that's to think about what has happened to Russia, happening to a first world nation like China for perpetrating such an act would be catastrophic to the economy of that country, whomever that actor may be. Because the amount of sanctions that would be placed against that country, it would be mind-blowing as to what would happen. Because the UN would immediately call for an emergency Security Council meeting, and they would immediately start applying sanctions to that country within hours of their perpetrating that devaluation of commodities markets. Because every country in the world is invested into the commodities markets. They have to be, because that's where their gross domestic product is derived from. So our protection lies within the fact that countries aren't going to step on each other's toes, because that's what starts wars. And people don't want to see a world war where every other country goes after another country specifically for devaluing the value that lies within commodities markets. That's where the world's billionaires and the robber barons of the world store their money, is within commodities marketplaces. That's where their money lives. So you start stepping on those people's toes, it's a bad day for everybody.
So let's talk about that briefly, and then I know you've got a couple of really exciting announcements. So the way I look at this is really what XUSD has done, your team, over many, many years, is to create this basket of commodities pools, silver, gold, palladium, oil, gas, all these different amazing earthly treasures. And to be able to leverage those and lean those under contracts, and then be able to have that as the assets. Really, we have a private treasury here. We have a private treasury
Right.
that's for the people. That's for the people. This is the people's money. And it's backed by the
That's
treasure
correct.
of the, right? And it's backed by the treasure of the earth. We were born to live in abundance. We were born under God. We were born in equity. And so when you look at that, everything from the earth is in our bodies, the gold, the water, the salt, the gases, the oxygen, the CO2, right? Why are we having to let bankers decide what we can and can't have? Well, because they know that if they could control those commodities and have those things, in a warehouse somewhere in the ground and we can't get access to it, they can control the flow of currency. So I don't know what the number is, Brian, but if you have, can you share that with the public?
Yeah, so let me talk about this for just a second. We're spread far and wide as far as the commodities markets are concerned. One of our bigger asset holders that we want to talk about is Keurigs. Keurigs, JAD, SAC, out of Peru. They're based in Lima. They have an office in London. They have an office in Mexico City. They are a massive mining corporation. They have 600 plus employees, 400 or so plus mines, over $70 billion in assets as a company. They're diversified in seven different nations where they're doing mining operations. Of their current holding of mines that they own, pledged into our pool right now, there are 225 of their mines that are pledged within our pool as it stands right now. That's just one of many asset holders that have assets within our pool. And as we've gone along, some of these contracts were signed years ago. And now we've had to go in and perform an audit on all of our asset pool as a whole. And recently we got the conclusion of that audit. And at the conclusion of that audit, we determined that the value of our pool was catastrophically larger than we had anticipated that it was based upon our contractual arrangements with our asset holders. And again, many of the assets within our pool as well, we own outright. Aside from assets that are owned by third-party companies that have come in and pledged those assets into our pool, thanks to ICTS Trust, our collectivizer of our asset pool that's pooled all of these assets together for us. And what has happened is when we've completed this audit, we realized, oh boy, this has gone a direction we didn't see coming. Because the value of our asset pool went from 44.267 trillion US dollars to now today, after the audit, it's valued at a little over 414 trillion US dollars. And that I know that's a number that is so hard for the mortal brain to wrap itself around. But when you're talking about 414 trillion US dollars, you have to understand that's like 52 times the national debt of the United States alone.
That's amazing.
It's an insane number. And we understand that it's an insane number. And we understand that that's something that's very hard for people to wrap their head around. But when you're talking about gold, silver, platinum, palladium, crude oil, precious metals of all types. We even have some exotic metals. When we say exotic, we're not talking about something that meteorite metals or something like that. But really, what we're talking about when we talk about exotic metals, we're talking about things that are utilized across the depth and scale of the technology industry. Stuff like molybdenum, ruthenium, osmium, cobalt, silica. These are all things that are heavily used in the tech industry, and the values of those precious metals are constantly on the rise because of such the demand that there is by the technology industry on those asset classes that it continues to create a value appreciation within those commodities marketplaces. So we're diversified so wide that we can justify that number, especially when you're starting to talk about exotic gases, hydrogen. We also have heavy water, which is something that's constantly now rising in price as these research agencies now are starting to understand how we can create new types of electrical generation through nuclear fission and nuclear fusion, where now we have an active tokamak reactor that has fused. Now they're, I think they're on 14 or 15 now times that they have actually completed fusion within a tokamak reactor in the northeast of the United States. The value of these things are constantly on the rise, and that's what puts us in this kind of a in the catbird seat, as it were, for this cryptocurrency. Because now with this asset pool, now we have this capability of constant growth momentum that's behind this because of what's happening within these commodities markets. So we're excited to be able to announce that for the first time publicly, that this is where we are. We're at 414 trillion US dollars as far as our asset pool is concerned. And it's allowed us to do some really, really, really cool things as we've been going forward. But we'll go into that in a minute, I think, when we're going into talking further about the stable chain.
So just to be clear, when you said trillion, that's with a T, right? Not a D. A T, trillion. 414 trillion. Correct, Brian?
With a T,
Okay.
with a capital T. We're not saying
Okay.
billion with a B. We're saying
Right.
trillion with a T. That's why I'm saying it is a mind-boggling number.
So I've been in some big businesses before. I've seen, a couple billion run through some tills, and but I this to me this is like you've this is ambrosia, because I have been dreaming about a way to connect metals and the earth's treasures back to the people's money. And that's what it's all about, right? When we can control the money supply and have this as our treasure indirectly, which makes this more and easily adoptable, because it is digital at this point. So I know we've got just a few more minutes ahead of us. I want to make sure we cover a couple more topics. So what's the best way to protect your investment into this blockchain technology, Brad?
Well, it's not even just, our blockchain technology, but blockchain technologies as a whole. If you're planning on investing into cryptocurrencies, first thing I recommend to you is this. Number one, let me say this. I am not a financial advisor. I am not an attorney. I am not an accountant. What I would recommend to you is, if it's best for you to hold cryptocurrency in your portfolio, talk to your financial advisor, talk to your finance, your attorney, talk to your accountant. They'll be able to give you some better guidance as to what's best for you. Now, saying that, there's a lot of ways that you can protect yourself, especially within the cryptocurrency marketplace. And again, what I would recommend is, to find the best structure for you. Because again, when you're talking about structures to structure your portfolio, there's all kinds of ways to do it. There's really only a handful of wrong ways to do it. But there are a lot of ways that work well. And again, that all applies to you and to how your portfolio is structured and how you want to build that and grow that for your dependents, whether that be your wife, your children, in the event that you of your untimely death, you want to be able to leave a legacy behind for your family. And really, one of the best ways to do that is through trusts. I talk about trusts from the standpoint of, I look at trusts like an onion, right? An onion has layers. With trusts, you want to have trusts and companies built in layers so that you can not only protect yourself personally, but you can protect your businesses, you can protect your assets, and you're able to protect yourself from the litigious society that we find ourselves in today. Everybody's sue happy. And so we, of course, as business owners, we want to protect ourselves. Of course, as individuals, we want to protect ourselves. And so being able to do that through a very finitely structured trust, or string of trusts, is really the best form and function to be able to do that. And I know, Kevin, thank you very much for what you're doing for XUSD holders. Kevin has been a very a vocal proponent of the trust structures and trusts that he creates, and has come on board with us and is offering his trust services to our token holders and helping them to develop the best structures possible in order to protect themselves from, like I said, from a litigious society.
All right, awesome. Thank you, Brian. So, by the way, this show is brought to you by In God You Trust. You can check us out at www.ingodyoutrust.org. That is In God You, not we, YOU, trust.org. And if I can just step on that for 1 second, make sure you, everybody, all over, wherever you are in this world, when you start looking at self-governance, which is what this is a proponent of, you're also going to have the responsibility to manage your own affairs financially. Cryptocurrency, up until recently, has really been the Wild West. Lots of people have lost lots of money just by losing passwords. So it's time to go back and don't look at proxying out all of your responsibility to these third parties. Don't let just lawyers handle your stuff or CPAs or accountants. Start looking at yourself as one that can handle these things because you're responsible for your wealth, right? And you can do that here. We're here to share that and help you with that, and how to get your feet back underneath you when it comes to these kinds of things. So anyway, thank you for that, everybody. Now I want to just finish off with this. I understand that you guys have had some excitement in the last couple of weeks, and that you want to explain the, a marketing opportunity that is happening for XUSD. Why don't you go ahead and share that with our audience all
So,
over, Brian?
yeah, so, Christmas morning, I gave our XUSD token holders kind of the gift of gifts as far as they're concerned for Christmas. And we launched the XUSD One stable chain, our own blockchain technology. To understand, it takes 18 to 24 months generally to develop a blockchain. And we took a crack team of developers. And I brewed a lot of coffee over a 2 month time span, and we built the XUSD One stable chain. And it is going to be going live this month. It's live to see the work being done on that chain as we're continuing to refine and tune and clean that up. So that is now available for connection into your MetaMask wallet for our token holders, and it will be available for folks to start purchasing here closer towards the end of the month. Now, one of the other crazy things that has taken place is this week I got an introduction to somebody that I was incredibly excited to get an opportunity to meet, and that's a man by the name of Norm Johnson. Now, if you don't understand who Norm Johnson is, Norm Johnson is the man that was born to kick a football. Norm was he not only was with the Pittsburgh Steelers, won a Super Bowl ring with them, but also with the Seattle Seahawks, the Atlanta Falcons, and he is probably one of the nicest human beings you could ever meet. But I had the opportunity to meet Norm and expose him to our cryptocurrency and what we're doing with that, and Norm got incredibly excited and proceeded to round up all of his athlete friends, and we started having conversations and talking about cryptocurrency and talking about how we were different versus everybody else within the market. And there's been many athletes, former pro athletes, that have gotten incredibly interested in what we're doing. So as we've gone forward, that led me to a conversation with seven-time Pro Bowl player, six-time first team All Pro. He was the NFL 1990s All Decade team. He was on the Pittsburgh Steelers All Time team. He is a Pro Bowler and a Pro Hall of Famer, Mr. DeMonte Dawson. Who has officially, as of this morning, we finally got the deal done. DeMonte Dawson is now one of, soon to be many, of our crypto evangelists behind the XUSD One stable chain, and will be a spokesperson for our product going forward. We're excited to have him on board. A lot of his teammates used to tease him and call him the Ned Flanders of football. And if you meet the man and you have an opportunity to have a conversation with him,
Okay.
you'll have an understanding that DeMonte is one of the nicest human beings that you could ever meet. So we're excited that he's on board, and we're looking forward to the future with that.
Okay, Brian, thank you so much. Sorry, we're running out of time, everybody. Thank you for coming to the show this evening. We'll have a recording for this about 24 hours from now. Gratitude to you, Brian, for coming on the show, for everybody listening, wherever
Absolutely.
you are in
Thank you,
this
Kevin.
world. Peace and love to you, everybody, and have a great night. We look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. In God You Trust. Have a beautiful weekend.